Pod Clubhouse.
This is Caroline with Daily Review.
And this is Mike from Pop Culture Review. And this is Without a Paddle, the Schitt's Creek podcast. Today, we're talking about episode 5 of season 6, The Premiere. The Premiere was written by David West Reed and directed by Andrew Civadino.
Hey, Mike, have you ever gotten your wisdom teeth taken out?
I have not. I am actually
I am all intact. Whoa.
I am all intact. I have actually one wisdom tooth that has kind of grown in a fugly kind of way.
Oh, God.
But it's not in pain, and so I am not doing anything about it.
Good Lord. Well, I had mine out like 10 seconds before I got married because I would come off my parents' insurance. So it was like, anything you got to get it done now, because I was about to be like a young person without very good insurance, and my parents had great insurance. So I got mine out, and it was so bad that my poor father was the one who took me. He was in the waiting room, and I was sedated, but I yelled so loud that he actually burst through the door where you're not allowed to go unless they call you back. And then he came down the hall and then he found me because I was yelling that much.
Oh,
he was
God.
Like, that's not acceptable. Like he's gonna cut a bitch for sure.
Do not like that. That is consistent with basically every wisdom tooth surgery story I've ever heard. I was there about 6 months ago. My dentist was, you know, you do have that one wisdom tooth in there. It's a bit impacted. You should probably have it taken out. I was like, it doesn't hurt though, so I'm not going to mess with it. He's like, that's not really the point. You should have it taken out because eventually something as bad is going to happen with it and it'll be more painful then. I said, well, what does that entail? Do I come to you and, you know, we just do that, you know, with some extra Novocaine? He's like, oh, no, that is surgery. We
yes.
don't do that here. You have to go to a motherfucker in like another town and go get your surgery.
Yeah.
I was like, that's going to be a hard no.
I swear to God, it should be like general anesthesia, not this bullshit. I mean, where you do Twilight sleep, not Twilight sleep is a complete fucking joke. It is not real. I've had it a couple of times. It is not real. You can still feel pain. You're just out of it. Like, you just don't know. You're not cognizant enough to rationalize with yourself, like, I'm okay. I'm at a doctor's office. You're just like out of it and in pain. Like, it's not right.
Did you wake up or when you were looped on your pain medication pills saying that you were a hungry, hungry hippo?
I did not do that. I have seen a wonderful amount of videos of people coming off of all their medications and loving it, loving all of the hungry, hungry hippo talk. That was hilarious in this, and it's always hilarious when people are looped up. Have you ever been looped up at all coming out of any surgery like that?
No, I mean, knock on wood, I haven't had a surgery since I was 5. I actually have very lucid dreams from that surgery that I convinced myself later in life, later when I was like a teenager, those were actually memories of me being born.
Whoa.
So I walked around for a long time telling people that I remember my birth. And it was not until I was informed that I had had the surgery when I was 5 that I remembered. And then it all made much, much more sense why I remember it.
That's
but I remember like the nurses, but they had like horns, like they were like demon people, like walking around kind of thing. I remember the tube coming out of my peepee.
Or like, your catheter,
yes. Because I couldn't, because the tube coming out of my peepee was the medical term they used.
Oh, that's what they use with the
Yeah, that was the medical
gross.
Term. I mean, so I remember, oddly, I remember a flag outside the window of like the ward where I was in waving. I remember my parents looking like their faces were all melted.
That's
so I was definitely on something.
That's really wild that you thought it was your birth. So I've had a bunch of different surgeries over the years. I had my gallbladder out and stuff like that. And definitely right when they give you this one medication before you actually go back to get general anesthesia, and that one is enough to get me ridiculous. I was flipping people off, just doing all these antics, telling people all this terrible stuff. I broke my nose when I was in high school. I fell off my bike. And when I woke up from that surgery, I was like crying and asking where my parents were. And they were right there. It loops you up, man. It makes you crazy. So appreciated this part of the episode. I thought it was super funny. And I do a lot of the things what Patrick does when I'm not under any anesthesia. So saying I'm a hungry, hungry hippo, I might just say that anyway. I also definitely am like that about the like, let me just hold you. And the other person's eyes are like, I have 55 other things to do and I do not want to do this. My children are like teenagers and they're like, get over it. And I do that whole thing where I'm like holding them and I'm loving it. And their face is like, how many seconds do I have to do this before this woman will let me go? Well, so I appreciated it all.
I actually thought this was a nice bookend to the earlier episode of the season, The Incident. You know, and you and I had talked about what would it be like if the roles were reversed and David needed to be in a position of caring for or being soothing to Patrick. And yeah. Now we actually kind of get that answer. I think David did a better job than he thought he would. I mean, obviously he doesn't like all of the, all right, we have to like force the lay down thing when he knows. he makes the great consent joke. He's like, you know what I want to do with you? And he's like, I don't think legally I can when you're like this. You know, so it's all the great really stuff. Funny. Yeah, it was so funny. Everyone was very funny. Tonight, everyone across the board was firing on all cylinders. It was great to see David in this caring role because he's clearly so uncomfortable with it. But that's also part of, I think what makes it so endearing.
Also, it makes me wonder, this one, and there was like at least two or three other episodes where Moira says it, as if must still be a very common phrase in Canada. Because like when Patrick asks for lasagna and he's like, as if, and then Moira says it in previous episodes, it made me think, is as if still alive and well up in Canada? It must be.
I kind of love that though.
It's funny and adorable.
It is adorable, and it was a formative phrase from both of our youths, I would say. Please. You know, as if.
Cher from Clueless.
Yeah, that's like mid-90s, you Loving know, classic talks. I gotta tell you, I thought you couldn't get cuter than Patrick as he interacts with David when he's not high. But then he ups the game, and I think he's extremely adorable with his looped-up self. But tell me, is there anything cuter than high David and hi Patrick at that premiere at the end of the episode, which the two of them with their glassy eye smiles of wonder at the end of the episode was just about the cutest thing I've ever seen.
So I feel kind of like a monkey. Did they both take his painkillers?
Yes.
Okay. They both took his painkillers. Because I was so confused when he was like, you need to take your painkillers. And he's like, okay. And then David's like, you look so weird, Patrick. Like your eyes are all like dilated or whatever. And then I'm like, oh wait, they both took the painkillers. They are hilarious.
Patrick asks for it, and David says, I think I'm going to take one too, because I've heard the first 15 minutes of the movie are very dense. So he wants that.
Right.
He needs to medicate himself to get through the actual crowning.
Yes, I heard him say that, and it did not absorb that he took the painkiller.
The show, and we would talk about a lot about the show, like the lines are very funny, but the facial cues and stuff are so good.
So good.
Go back and look at them when everyone is running from the crows, but David especially, before he turns to the camera and says, this is fucked, which we actually have that audio.
This is fucked.
Before he says that, look at him. He's just staring like a kid who just found Christmas presents.
Yeah.
He is, or I guess Jewish Hanukkah presents, because he's the Jewish Channing Tatum. It, the wonder and joy of the goddamn crows flying everywhere and attacking people, it is pure joy.
It is. That's how I describe it. Wonder and joy.
Let's move past the baby talk, because it'll be
interesting. Oh, we're moving right past the baby talk?
But because I think it goes into a larger question that Patrick asks.
Let's just go into it. I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay. Have you ever had something in your life that you thought would happen and then didn't pan out? Maybe like having a wife and a baby, or marrying Christina Aguilera?
Yes, for sure. Absolutely. Well, there's actually probably like a million things that I thought were going to happen a certain way and didn't. I think I was a person at 21 or 22 who thought I had like the next 100 years planned out. I definitely got bitch slapped by life a bunch of times that like plan all you want. Like, let's just see how that works out for you. So I definitely appreciated the idea that you can say something out loud like that, like a wife and a child, and you're not doing it in any way to cast any shade on your current situation. It's just not what I thought was going to happen. That's all. How about you?
According to David, he actually achieved one of the two.
That's true.
David has been told he's very childlike,
which was funny.
I mean, my life is, I think, filled with unexpected twists and turns that I didn't expect to be where I am at this point. Part of that journey also goes to make up who you are. You know, I'm one of those people who believes in no regrets, because all the good and bad decisions kind of brought you to where you are and who you are. You know,
I think that tattoo is pronounced no regrets.
No regrets. Well, that's what my neck tattoo says.
I assumed. Yeah.
But I'm having it fixed though.
Oh, don't do that. I like it. No regrets, Mike. No regrets.
Yeah. I like that Patrick said that to David, and I think that's probably a sentiment that everyone, you, me, everyone listening, probably can identify with, you know, not exactly where you thought you would be. But do you think Patrick really believed that when it comes to the baby? Or do you think he was just picking up on the fact that he said too much when he was looped up, and he's just backtracking to not make David freak out?
Two things on that. So for one, I didn't see it coming that he was going to twist it like that. Like the, well, haven't you ever had, you know, something not come true that you thought was going to happen? I really appreciated that. That was a very like a life lesson, make it bigger kind of moment, and smart. Like that's a good pivot. That's a lot more clever and insightful than him just saying, well, I don't know. I don't know if I want a baby or not, which is what like 90% of people would say. So it gave me more insight into Patrick as a person, that he had a lot of like self-awareness, that it was like, well, that's just something I thought that was going to happen and didn't happen. But that's all that really was. He didn't focus quite so hard on the baby. I do think the baby concept is going to come up again. I understand 100% what you're saying. Like, was he just like embarrassed that he kind of spilled the beans
not embarrassed. It wasn't, I didn't take it as embarrassed. I was wondering if he was trying to, you know, part of Patrick's charm is that he really understands David.
Okay.
And I think he is a pretty good predictor of how David is going to react. Mm-hmm. Though I don't know if he was right in this particular case. I think his, haven't you ever said something didn't come true. One, I think he kind of had to because of the wife and baby statement from earlier in the episode. But two, I think he was probably gaming that David was going to kind of flip out at that. Not flip out like in a mad way, but like in an overwhelmed anxiety kind of way.
Sure.
So I don't think he was embarrassed about it so much as I think Patrick probably approaches what he tells David in a very controlled way as to try and manage David's emotion.
To use the word backtrack with me, so that's why I use the word embarrassed. What emotion would you apply to the backtrack? Is it simply just that he just going to approach that subject, he certainly wouldn't have wanted to approach it like on looped up on drugs. He would have
That was exactly my take. That this is a conversation that I think he probably wants to have with David.
Eventually.
This is not the way he was probably planning on having the conversation.
I don't think anyone would plan, like, I'm going to wait till I'm high and then I'm going to blubber it out.
No, but I tell you, a lasagna does sound really good right now, as if David would make any. I was totally on board with that, though. I was like, I could go for lasagna.
I know. And I feel like lasagna would be something good to eat after getting your teeth done, because it's kind of, you know, it's soft.
I love that he called him the Jewish Channing Tatum. These two are just so goddamn cute. They are probably my favorite couple on television, at least right now anyway.
Do you know why I like them and why they work for me so well? What? They're one of the few couples on TV that are funny without degrading one another. Like a lot of times on sitcoms, the way they get the laugh is to take a dig at their spouse or their fiance, like, well, you don't want enough sex or something like that or whatever, and they go back and forth. But they
the Al and Peg Bundy dynamic,
and it's across the board, all over the place. It's really nice to see a couple who can be funny and not tear each other down. And you know what, Johnny and Moira do the same thing. I can't think of a time when Johnny and Moira say anything ugly to hurt the other one in a way to get a laugh or to just, you know, leave them out there for everyone to make fun of or something. They are very careful about that, I feel like, with their relationships.
I would definitely agree with that, but I mean, I think that goes to one of the larger allures of Schitt's Creek is that it is riotously funny. It could be really cutting with its sense of humor, but it's never mean.
Yeah.
And even if it bordered on being too sharp or too sarcastic, it's never done in a malicious way ever. I mean, this is the definition of a safe space where you can really laugh and enjoy yourself.
I agree. And the two of them are perfect because Patrick is not a doormat with David. There's times...
No.
I was just rewatching an episode when David says, I love you. Patrick, you know, accepts that and takes that in and then is like, and this would be even more perfect if I had that cup of tea. And David's like, fuck. And he has to like back off and go get it. There are so many sitcoms that would have, you know, David would have been like, well, you don't have to be like that, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it would have been like ugly, but it was funny. They are very good at crafting those moments with couples.
They walk the line very well. I mean, try and think of especially a sitcom gay couple on television. There's few and far between, even fewer of those that are probably done well.
And you know what I really super love about that, though? The fact that it is a gay couple doesn't even register to me.
Like, no,
they're just another couple on TV, which I know that is a very 2020 maybe comment to say just or whatever, but it's important because whenever it seems like they add anybody of any diversity other than just mainstream, heterosexual, whatever, there always seems to come with this like spotlight that comes on it where it just doesn't seamlessly flow in. They try to make a big deal out of it all the time within whatever show. This does such a great job of just absolutely normalizing it in a way that if you were just Midwest America or whatever, it's like, like, look, it's just normal. There's nothing to make a big spotlight about.
Right. They're not a gay couple. No. They're just a couple.
Exactly.
Right. That goes, you know, kind of to the safe space idea. One of the things that I love about Schitt's Creek is its inclusiveness. The fact that it's never an issue. No one has ever batted an eye at David's sexuality or Patrick's sexuality or anything like that. And it like, just doesn't come up. It's not.
Yeah.
But it doesn't come up in like a way of, oh, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
Or like, yeah. It's not like a shame spiral. It's, you know, I think Johnny says it best. I don't know who he's talking about how his son is a pansexual and he just wants him to be happy. And he's having like a real honest father moment. And it's not, you know, my God, my son is gay or my son is bisexual or my son is pansexual or whatever it is. It was, I just want my son to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the governing credo of the show. It's one of the things I love most about it.
Yeah. And they know. can treat situations like that, not like an after school special where you feel like they're preaching to you or it feels gross. There's such like genuine emotion behind it that you're like, this is great. And I completely understand where this person's coming from and where these characters are coming from. I'm sure a lot of it has to do with, you know, the fact that they're a real son-dad duo and in real life, Dan is pansexual. So they've obviously lived through this and probably thought about how maybe it didn't go perfectly in real life. I don't know how Eugene took everything. I don't know how their family took everything. But if you could write it and you could write it in a way that would be the most ideal situation and you get to do that when you're a writer, they hit the nail on the head of how you would want people to treat it and act.
The show also doesn't pat itself on the back for being so woke either.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't make an issue of it to put down people who would have a problem with it. But nor does it go any other way and strut around, you know,
most diverse on TV or something.
Right. Like it's just they just are.
Because you said Alan and Peggy, for those of you who don't follow enough TV, that'd be the Bundys from Married with Children back in the day. You know who could be the exact gripey, gross couple is obviously Jocelyn and Roland. And even those two are supportive of one another. It's not that they ever don't have an issue with each other. Like Jocelyn was all stressed out when it looked like Roland slept with Moira and all that kind of thing. We don't ever see them name calling each other or tearing each other down, you know, making each other feel bad. Like it's just not a part of this show. And they would be a perfect Alan and Peggy in any other show. They would be. That's amazing.
That is.
Bravo
it is.
I mean, to the show for finding that lane and being able to stick in it.
It's what you would hope the next evolution of sitcom writing is.
It's a whole thing. You know? I know you and I have talked about this because for whatever reason, our kids will find shows where people seem to be yelling all the time. And this is a show where people are not yelling all the time. There's not that layer of like frantic, I don't even know what to call it, like angst all the time. I mean, don't get me wrong. They have their moments, but you get what I mean. Like there's not this layer of like screaming and tearing each other down.
The show lives at like a level 9 of anxiety because of its characters. Right. But that's very different than angst or faux outrage. The show succeeds best because it reflects so much of how most people are a lot of the time.
Or at least how we'd like to respond to things in situations. I think that there's times when, like especially Patrick, I think he does such a great job of knowing David and knowing that he is, you know, a person who can be a 10 on his emotions to any response, really. And he does such a great job of being able to interact with him in a way that just subdues, you know, those tens into like a 5.
He's the David Whisperer.
He is the David Whisperer. I love that. He really is. He's the David
Whisperer.
I do have to ask you this. Is this Chekhov's baby? Are we going to see a baby coming in their future?
So, as good a David Whisperer as he is, for something tells me that David is not going to be adverse to this baby idea, or at least not for long. I think one of David's driving characteristics in the show has always wanted love around him. Think back to when they were selling the town. He tells Alexis that he wants to get an apartment with her. And she's like, nah, I'm going to, you know, go live on my own. And then he approaches Stevie about move to New York with David wants love. He wants family in his life.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe just because there will be a knee-jerk reaction against it, which we saw a little bit today. Did we really see him being against having a baby or just the way it was kind of all presented?
I think it was just surprise is what we
saw.
I mean, which I think most people, I mean, if you're just engaged And despite David's age, I don't think he's feeling like he's past his prime in terms of eggs and whatnot. You know, the idea of having a family, it's not like anyone felt like they were past that. And if you went to any engaged couple and mentioned a baby, anyone would be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I don't care what your background is, gay, straight, whatever. You would be like, you're going too fast here. We're not talking about babies yet.
When it comes in the middle of, I want to have lasagna and I want a spoon with you and I'm a hungry, hungry hippo. It's a lot to process. But I don't think David's going to be adverse to the baby idea for long, if he is at all. It seems like a very natural next step in his kind of character evolution.
Hey, so given that, do you think this could be potentially the type of show that would give fans that kind of 6 feet under, like forward-looking kind of ending, where you get to see a little further in the future via, I don't know, flash forward or something like that? Is this that kind of show?
I don't think it would normally be this kind of show for like a season ending kind of thing, or just like a normal in episode thing. But I can very much see at the end of the show them giving the fast forward to what happened to these beloved characters. Because I don't think there's going to be any way that they're going to wrap up all the storylines that you're going to know for sure how everyone wound up.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be weird. I mean, so much of Schitt's Creek is, this is just another day in Schitt's Creek. This is what's happening today.
I don't think that they're actually going to do that. I think it's going to end exactly how this episode ended, which is us wanting more. Us feeling like, wait, I want to actually see what the next hour is going to look like. I can't wait. And because Dan himself has said, completely willing to revisit these characters. I'm willing to continue their stories.
I think I would be very upset if I didn't know where they were going to. But I mean, that's like so many shows that either, no matter whether it has a good or bad finale, the best shows, you always want to know what happened to them. If they don't do that, I'll be sated with the idea that one day there may be a movie or some kind of spinoff or some kind of revisiting of these characters. That would be great.
I just can't.
The movie talk has been circulating a lot lately.
A lot. So. And I've heard multiple times out of Dan in many interviews, he's just waiting for the idea basically to hit him. And once he has a really great angle, you know, he's going to go for it. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to try to do it. Maybe a movie, especially, I mean, obviously on Netflix, making a movie is not what it used to be. Oh, it has to be an X-Files movie that has to go out in the theater kind of thing, where it feels like, well, this is weird. I always watch X-Files in my house and now I'm watching it in the theater. It doesn't have to like be like that with Netflix, obviously, with all the streaming. Yeah, it could be a 2-hour special, essentially. It's almost like a very Brady Christmas or what have you, where they just come on for like 2 hours and show you this big moment in the Rose's timeline, you know, where we still get to stop in, which I would love. I would love for them to keep doing that.
Just think about what you said. A 2-hour Schitt's Creek movie or special, that's basically equivalent to 6 episodes of Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
That's essentially half a season of Schitt's Creek. Imagine what you can cover in that amount of time with the same kind of, you know, tight writing and directing that they normally have on the show.
I think that would be amazing. And I think we would all receive that in a way that is right on for this audience base. Like, I think we would eat this up. It's not the type of thing where it's like, oh, I can't sit there and watch 6 hours of Schitt's Creek. Hells yeah, we could, you know?
I feel like we watch 6 episodes of Schitt's Creek all the time.
I have it on almost all the time in the house. Like, it's almost always on somewhere in one room or another.
You know, like the best shows, it's a great night show. It's a great falling asleep show if you're one of those people who watches, you know, wants the TV on to fall asleep to. And it's just a great background show because I realized what makes the best Schitt's Creek episodes to me watching this episode, because I think the premiere is going to turn out to be one of like the classic Schitt's Creek episodes when the book is all written and all said and done, because you didn't have to wait more than 15 or 20 seconds this episode to get a great line and or like facial or visual cue that made you laugh and made you laugh out loud.
And there was a lot of payoff along the way. Like we had a lot of movement. So for this couple to be talking about a baby, well, that's a big step forward. Whether or not that happens or doesn't happen, that's a big step forward for those two.
But also didn't feel forced though.
No.
Because it came natural. Because of how it came out. Right. People who get looped up on, you know, pills or whatever, you know, their inhibitions are dropped and it's like drunk people who speak the truth. You know, they say things that are in their brain.
Are you one of those people? Are you more truthful when you're drunk or just more silly, or are you like a mean drunk, or what are you like?
I'm not a mean drunk. So I have two modes. I either get very quiet.
Okay.
So like I disappear, or I am just, if I live at like an 8 or 9 in social situations, being drunk can very easily make me like 11 or 12
oh my God.
Out of 10. but no, not a mean drunk at all. I probably do get more sillier. I don't think I have a habit of spilling secrets or saying innermost thoughts. I'm a pretty good vault. That is one inhibition that doesn't usually drop.
I would say that I say more inappropriate things, but I don't say secrets. So I'm funnier or sillier or louder or bigger. And I say things that are definitely like, I wouldn't have said that had I like given it a second. But so I'm filterless, but not about opening the vault. You're right. Like so far as I know, I haven't ever wrecked any secrets.
I maybe wouldn't point out something about someone or situation. Right. When I was sober, I would definitely probably do that when I was drunk. Right. You know,
right.
I like a job I used to have. One of my first, there were two partners who were caught. How should I say? Well, they were just fucking. They were fucking in a conference room during a Christmas party. Wow. And it was just known in the firm, but no one like ever talked about it. But we got to a subsequent Christmas party, I think 2 years later, and we were all in the sauce. And it was very much being talked about because everyone was just shit-faced drunk. And everyone knew all the details. And it was one of those things, like, you wouldn't ever normally talk about it.
Right.
But I remember very clearly this part. Yeah, exactly. I'm very clear at this part, being like, oh my God! You know, like, so... It was one of those.
That's awesome. I love it.
Can I ask you a question?
I want you to.
What job is better than owning your own business?
I think no job. I absolutely 150% have that entrepreneurial spirit. And whenever I think about getting a job myself, the first step goes like this. Well, how much money could I make? And the second step goes, how could I possibly have someone tell me what to do? Because I can't. It's the same reason why I don't want to go back to school. I have my bachelor's degree. I always think about getting my master's, but the idea of having like a boss telling me what to do makes me irate.
I never really enjoyed school, especially college, my master's or law school or any of those kinds of things, because I hated having to listen to other people tell me what I should think about X, Y, or Z. Shit drives me crazy. It still drives me crazy today. Give me the information and let me make my own thoughts. I don't want to be told what to do.
So definitely, I'm all about it. And I come from a long line of people who own their own businesses. So my dad owns his own business. My grandparents all owned their own businesses. We try to avoid working for the man if possible, honestly.
Or the woman.
Actually, like the most successful business owner is my great grandmother, Tilly. She had her own grocery store and was exceedingly successful and absolutely pushed our family to a different class because of her efforts. That happened because her husband, so that'd be my great grandfather, got injured. And so she had to take over the reins completely, but did and absolutely successfully. And so absolutely, it's not working for the man, working for the woman. But man, she had the little kids working. She did a grocery store. She had like the 4-year-olds toting a wagon with the to-go orders. Like she thought of shit like DoorDash before DoorDash. Like she would make meals and you could order them and then the little 4-year-old would like take the wagon and deliver.
She's, oh my God, I love
yeah.
I love
like, that. I mean,
she was a boss, man. She was
Tilly
a boss.
Was a fucking boss. And the best compliment I ever got was from my grandfather who told me, I never got to meet Tilly, obviously, but I reminded him so much of Tilly. And I was like, oh my God, that's like the best compliment I've ever got my whole life. I actually have her hamburger press in my kitchen hanging on the wall because it means so much to me. And I never even met her. You're that's like, there's amazing. Nothing to say after that.
That's a great family story. I was going to make a joke about what time should I be over for hamburgers, but
that would be a distance. Here's the bad news. The cooking part didn't stick.
That's why you have other people to do it for you.
Delegate that shit.
Like a boss.
Delegate that shit. I was just telling somebody the other day, I was to get shit done, if I'm the boss, man, the workers do the work. I'm the boss. I don't do the work. But I still consider I got it done. I did get it done. You're like, right, whatever.
Do you know the gif of the panda boss?
Oh, yeah, like where he's like putting his hands behind his head. I love panda boss.
Yeah, that, I love that panda
fucking
boss.
Panda
that,
boss.
That's what you're making me think.
I want to be-
You are the panda boss.
The ultimate panda boss. And right, well, and you know what? I would like to think of myself as like a good boss, a good leader in that like I would get my hands dirty. Like I'm in there pulling the rope as hard as everyone else. I'm not about like, I'm not a tyrant, I'm not a dictator. I'm in there. I just know what skills I have and what skills I don't have. I would not put myself in the cooking realm. That's not my, that's not my station in life. Just is not.
Well, I mean, one of the things about, I think, especially if you're going to work for yourself is you really have to actually understand and be honest with yourself and with people you're going to work with, like what your skill set is, what do you bring to it, and better, even more important than that, is what you don't know but other people do, and not being afraid to kind of delegate that out, though.
That's an amazing segue into our Johnny and Stevie storyline, where we are needing to really examine this business relationship and talk about where this is all going. So let's jump into that.
We were actually kind of wrong now, as we turned out. I thought we were going to be right, but it seems, at least for right now, we were wrong that this will not become.
Well, I'm going to pause you okay, because I don't think we were wrong. I just think they sped it up faster than I expected, because she did have other things that were going on. Like, she said she had been looking. Like, it's not that she hasn't been, like, trying and looking around at other things.
Right.
So I want to think we just weren't privy to those interviews the way I thought we were going to be. But they just sped it up.
I thought we were Kami thing for a couple episodes.
I did too.
I really did think where we were going to see her in funny uniforms. And that was going to be a really kind of funny gag running through with Stevie. You know, something, because the Pan Am outfit, that the Larry Air outfit was, it was so funny. And it was so anachronistic of, like, a time. I thought we were going to get that. Like, maybe she was going to work for Bob, and we were seeing her in, like, a grease monkey, you know, outfit. Yeah. You know, I thought we were going to get some of that stuff.
She'd rock a mechanic's jumpsuit. She'd look so cute with her little Stevie name patch.
Oh, my God. With the zipper done a little bit down.
Oh, my gosh. Too much. That's too far. Your Stevie love just shut my comments down.
Well. So, I'm not going to lie that I haven't had dreams about Stevie and Jocelyn and me all hanging out together.
Wow. So that's a Schitt's Creek. Shitsome, huh?
I want to be deep in that Schitt's Creek. So, but I was curious, though, when I was watching
the episode. Wait, so that'd be your, like, Schitt's Creek threesome, huh? It would be you, Jocelyn, and Stevie. Now that makes me pause and be like, who would I want involved?
Yeah.
Definitely David, because I think I'm sure he's got mad skills. Who would be my third?
You think David has better skills than Patrick?
I bet Patrick is very technically, like, he cares and he's probably pays a lot of attention, but he's very, very new. I don't think he has very much experience. So that's the only reason why I think David would bring up stuff that I didn't even know existed on the planet.
Maybe that's true.
An exciting person to have as a part of the group.
Something tells me David would be the person who would have ideas, but would not want to do them himself, but rather maybe have them done to him.
Well, I'm going with the idea that he's all in on this, and that he is committed and he is excited to do this. So maybe I think my third would be a woman, but then I don't know who. If it was a guy, then I guess I'm going with Patrick, because then Patrick, David, and me, that seems right. That seems like a fun time. But a girl, the only one that's, like, of our age, I don't really look at Twyla like that. So I guess I would go with Alexis. Again, boy, she would have some weirdo shit. But then that doesn't work because they're brother and sister.
Oh, no.
That gets Twyla, bad.
Alexis over Twyla? No, I would definitely go Twyla over Alexis.
Yeah?
For
As
sure.
As a third?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple of interesting combinations. I think a really crazy, you'd probably need to, like, hydrate several times would be, like, a David, Twyla, you. There are a couple of interesting threesome combinations I think that are possible with the Schitt's
Creek. We have
crowd.
To just ignore their real life relationships, because obviously we know David and Twyla are brother and sister in real life. We just have to ignore that. I know I'm saying that as a caveat for any listener who's like, these fuckers are disgusting.
No. I'm saying because, you know, Twyla has seen some
just
shit.
Just the character. Oh, yeah, that's true.
And
she would be doing something and we'd be like, what are you doing? She'd be like, oh, this is what I call the can opener. Yeah. And you'd be like, what?
Yeah. You hold my legs like this. Yep. And then,
she would know something. Well, and Twyla and Jocelyn were at the yoga class. So I'm going to give them a lot of props. I'm going to ask our audience. All right. So if you had a Schitt's Creek threesome, who would it be? Who would be your threesome? Who would be a good pairing? Who would be a good wine pairing with your cheese?
I actually may be revising mine. I think I actually may go Twyla, Jocelyn, me. I may leave Stevie off for the sexual gratification.
I am shocked. I thought you were all about the Stevester.
You know, I love Stevie. I think just as far as, like, rattle the headboard, make you, like, lose your breath sex, I think Twyla and Jocelyn are going to give the better time.
Definitely Jocelyn. They play all those crazy role-playing games, and they have, like, certain times when they go to the motel and they use fake names and they do
all
stuff.
You do not need to pitch me on sloppy Jocelyn.
Yeah, no, but in case listeners are forgetting, if they're thinking, oh, come on, she's just like the teacher at school. No, you guys remember, she's like had like a lot of little moments where they play all kinds of games within their relationship, which that's rad. I'm all about that. Who are we talking about again? Johnny and Stevie having a business. We're both like, hold on a second. I need to think. I need a minute.
I'm going to need a minute. I'm going to need a minute.
Can we put this on pause for a second? I got to go in the other room. Hold on.
I need to take a shower. Listen, what did you think? Because I don't know how I felt about this. I'm still working it out, so I'm going to work it out a lot with you. But I want to, okay. What did you think of Stevie saying she wasn't trusting her instincts, she was trusting Johnny's instincts? Was that disappointing to hear, or was that empowering for Stevie to have that realization?
That's a heavy one.
It is a heavy one.
I want to go a little slow about that, and definitely we can talk it through more. I guess I want to say, just as in knowing when you should be the boss and you should delegate, I think that there is a lot of value in recognizing when you have something to learn from someone else and trusting them to be your mentor. Realizing that while she had the dream or the drive to go out there and be something different in the world, I think recognizing that she had overlooked the opportunity right there in her own motel lobby.
There's no job, right? That is the mentor. There's no job better than being your own boss.
Yeah, that is the mentor of Johnny. That's okay, because I don't take that like that in any way diminishes her. In fact, I give her more credit for saying you recognize it and you acknowledge like, hey, I've been overlooking your prowess and I should have paid attention and said, you're a perfect mentor for me to get some experience and understand. And maybe she shifts and turns into a different franchise owner. But this itself gives her all the experience she needs to go out in the business world and become who she probably really wants to be, which is the one and only sole owner of everything.
I think that's actually a very consistent take. What their relationship has been ever since Rosebud happened, ever since Johnny has started working with her at the motel, I think it's been a little father-daughter, but I think it's also been very mentor-mentee. And they haven't really focused on it because, you know, that maybe is a little too serious for, you know, a show that is much more lighthearted.
I appreciate the way that they did it in terms of Johnny didn't come in crowing about his business acumen to Stevie. He came in, hat in hand, saying, I can see you're overwhelmed, and rolled his sleeves up and cleaned toilets, made beds. He didn't try to jump into like, I'm the head of the pyramid and you need to do what I say, which in real life, I think would happen more often than not. That person would have such ego. They would come in and see this young girl with this all this potential of what this motel could be and where they could go with it, and would just take advantage and or just put their claws in her and be like, all right, now you do what I say. But the way that he was willing to actually be like under her in terms of what the jobs were going to be and work up with her until he had literally earned all the respect that she's giving him. If you look back at all the seasons, he earned that.
He always approached her as someone maybe who had something to teach her, but never as a boss underling kind of thing. I think they were always a partner, which the inscription that he gives her, then he writes inside Fast Forward to Success, Business the Johnny Roseway, is wishing you happiness in your bright future, which is okay. That's pretty pat, whatever. Right. But he signs it, your partner, Johnny Rose.
I loved it.
That really stuck with me. And, you know, made me kind of go, you know.
It did. It did make me do that, too. What's the matter with us? Why would we be so snivelly over? Is it just the idea of, like, what any single one of us wants in life is to have someone say, I'll stand by your side. And so to say, your partner, I'm here for you and I support you, to the point where I'm not even going to try to create a situation to guilt you into sticking around and do my dream. If you have something you want to do better, I'm still your partner in the world. Like, you can still look back to me for whatever you need. I'm still here. Isn't that like kind of what we all want as like humans, to feel like we have that?
I think so. I think Stevie has a really high and a really low and then a really high in this episode with Johnny. And that feeling you're talking about in her kitchen or her apartment or her bedroom apartment.
When he goes, I want to sit down with you, not on your bed.
But not on your bed, though. And he looks so scared in that moment.
That was so perfect.
But, you know, I think a lot of shows would have done this differently and when more poorly. When she clearly is crestfallen at the idea of being bought out, he doesn't back down. He doesn't say, unless you want to come back. And he never gives in to what clearly he would like her to keep working. He acknowledges, he heard her, that she needs to go try something new, and he's going to support her in that. He's come up with an idea that allows him, selfishly allows him like an ownership in the motel, like a real ownership, but he presents it in a way, and I think really means it in a way of, you know, this will give you the ability to go find yourself. I am supporting you here, even though at that point, he doesn't realize it's not what she wants to hear. But so I think that's a low for her, but think back to their faces. His face when she says she wants back in, and her face when he embraces her coming back so much. I thought it was just a great moment.
The one face that made me a little nervous is that after he says, like, okay, he'd like to have her back, and then he makes this, like, face. I didn't know what he was going to say. And then he yes. spills it and he says, but I took on another partner role. And then they have that laugh about the typos on a business card and all that stuff.
We have, that was so we have that sound clip right now about business cards. It made me laugh out loud.
Roland, I know he gave me his new business card.
Never saw so many typos on a business card.
That part, I got so nervous in my stomach when he went, I was like, no, don't have some reason why she can't come back. Like, I just want this to go smoothly from here.
Yes, but the humility was also great, though, because he said, you know, he says to her, he says, but don't always trust my instincts because yes. I had to take on role. Which this is, you know, I last week and I think the last two episodes, I was really negative on the Johnny Roland situation. This episode gave me what I had been waiting for all along. And I almost wish, you know, I could take back knowing what happened here, what I've said in the last two episodes, because he hasn't been taken over as a pod person. He realizes that he cannot believe that he's in business now with Roland.
Yes.
He says it to Stevie.
Such a relief.
Such a relief.
That we
such
can
a relief.
See when, that is really the case.
Yeah, that he's aware of it. That makes me all good with the storyline. But when he turns to her and he says, don't trust my instincts all the time because, you know, and she already knew because obviously Roland had already given her a business card. The way he deadpans, I've never seen so many typos in a business card before. It was just so good. This is the Johnny Rose with Roland interaction.
I love it.
That I had been missing. That makes me feel all is right in the world.
Today. Agree. That was really funny. Very, very funny.
But before we move off of it, did you happen to catch what the pull quote was advertising the book Business the Johnny Rose Way?
No,
at the top?
Tell me.
To you, it says, read this now. Sunrise Bays, Moira Rose. That is the pull quote.
Oh, my God.
What did you think? What did you think of young Eugene Levy on the cover?
Oh,
the
well, see, that's the Eugene Levy that I know and grew up with. So I actually had a moment where I was like, did he really write a book? Like, are they like poking fun at something that he really wrote? I have not found that he did. If anyone out there knows that he actually did write some sort of book, I didn't see anything, but it seemed like the kind of hilarious thing that might happen, you know, that Dan would take the opportunity to tease his dad about.
There's a part where I think it's actually Stevie picks up the book. And so you see the bottom of the book, of the jacket. Mm-hmm. You know how like a lot of books, especially hardcovers, have like the picture of the author in black and white on the back?
Yeah.
There's a picture of the same young Eugene Levy on the back of that book. And I wish I could zoom in and get a shot of it because it was probably, you're probably right. Dan probably found either old pictures of his dad or something out there. And he was like, we've got to use these.
And
somehow.
He even bothered to say, like, ignore the hair. I was like, oh, because you know that that's what real Eugene would be thinking. Like, don't look back at those pictures and look at the hair.
Right.
You know,
look,
it's embarrassing.
Right. Look past all that for some nugget
Please,
of truth in there.
Yes.
Right?
So overall, are you happy with what they're doing with Stevie? That she's going to come back in the fold?
She'll be the truth teller to Roland and Johnny. Be the reminder to Johnny to not necessarily get caught up in Roland's capers. But as two of them, I think her great role is she speaks the truth and she'll call them on their nonsense when they have their nonsense, you know?
Okay.
So yeah, I never wanted her to leave the motel.
I
love her relationship with Johnny, and it's been one of my favorite relationships in the show the last several seasons. So,
well, and that's one of the things we talked about.
This is where I always wanted her.
We talked about in a previous podcast about whether or not success for her is, does she have to leave the town? Does she have to go do something completely different, or can she just be happy and be where she is? Hey, is that okay to do that to this character? This actually works for me because this feels like, I love the fact that she absolutely acknowledged what I had said in a previous podcast when I said, it bothers me because I didn't feel like she earned the entire franchise experience because she never tried or they never showed us that she tried to build the business as, you know, Rosebud or even before they got there. When she acknowledges that and says that to Johnny, that I didn't see the opportunity you gave me to go out there and do more with the motel. Yes, that is exactly what I saw. That's what I was pointing out, that I didn't feel like it was earned. But now that she acknowledged it and was saying like, so now I'm going to give it my all and I'm going to go for this. Brilliant. That's exactly what I needed to happen. That fixes everything that I was complaining about last week.
I look back and I think it was probably being, I didn't feel well, especially last week.
I know, we were just being grouchy. Probably, for all of you guys who had to listen to us, I'm sorry. Yeah. We were just being grouchy. Apologize.
I listened last week again and it was particularly grouchy.
It was a wine fest and not in a good way.
It was a wine fest. No, not at all. Though I do stand by, having a problem with like the way they were doing the Johnny and
yeah, Roland stuff. We could go down the whole thing and defend our points, but I'm just saying I agree with you so much.
But I think it's being too kind of serious about it. But I think this episode was like the springtime. You throw open the windows, you take that first bit of fresh air, yes, and you realize that everything is okay.
Yeah.
This was the episode for me. Like, I felt.
And a little like reset, right? Like a little like Stevie's back.
A big reset.
David and Patrick are doing great. Things finally feel like it's really the right relationship between Johnny and Roland again. Like, okay, all right, we're here, we're back.
Yeah, all the pods have been put away. Everyone is back where they're supposed to be. And we were rewarded. Like, it was a 21-minute episode. I don't think one full minute went by that I didn't laugh at some point. We have been skirting around the issue, but I think we need Alexis to catch us up here on what is going on with the movie premiere of The Croning.
Okay, we have a situation on our hands that needs to be solved now. We have a 12-time Daytime Emmy Award attending actress coming to walk the Merlot carpet in hours, and press coming from all over, bringing attention to your town. So either you can help me out, or I pull the plug now and nobody wins.
What was your take on, it was going to be a movie premiere, then and not, and now, is it fair to Alexis that she gets put in this position to throw together a premiere in Schitt's Creek with only 4 hours to spare?
I don't think it's fair in terms of like this is like what she really wants to do with her career. And so it kind of sucks to feel like you're just really just scrambling, because if you guys remember from Singles Week, same thing happened to her there. She had an idea. It kind of got twisted. She just meant to have a singles day, and Moira had pitched a singles week on her behalf. And so she already had this messed up thing. Jocelyn goes into labor and she ends up having to do the whole thing at the last second. I felt bad that this was like her second project. It was already coming in this way that she was like, oh shit, how am I supposed to handle this? However, I think that the reality, having thrown fundraising kind of stuff myself, feeling like we're going to do it this way. No, wait, I kind of have cold feet. Let's not do it like that. And then having someone give you some good feedback and you're like, you know what? Let's just go full out. That has exactly happened to me before where I'm like, you know what? And like there's costumes in the barn. We can put on a show. Like I absolutely 100% lean into that, and I'm going to put on a show. I am the girl who pulls out the Merlot carpet that came out of the flooded church.
I loved how they all took, how Ronnie, Roland, and Alexis all took to calling it the 20-foot Merlot. Yes. Without blinking an eye.
Yes.
Without blinking an eye. They all just fell into it. Like, yes, the 20-foot Merlot. That's what we're going
with. Are you the type of person who does want to like cobble stuff together like that? Or are you the type of person who's like, if I don't have these certain ingredients to whatever, like I'm not throwing something together? Or do you just say like, I don't care. I'll go beg, borrow, and what's the other thing? Beg, borrow, steal.
Steal.
I'm like, what's that other thing you do?
You're so good. You're such a moral person.
I can't
person,
even know David. The word steal.
Beg, borrow,
I'm like, beg, borrow, and what else know. Do people do besides begging and borrowing? I don't think there's anything else. I'm so that person that it has been joked with me on multiple occasions. I should have a business, like whether it be like a carnival or whatever, because I would 100% be the girl who has like that. Remember that movie where they have that like makeshift carnival where it's like they build the slide, but it's like totally not safe. They just make it. Do you remember that? It was like kind of like a Jackass type movie or whatever.
Oh, Action Park.
Yeah, I think so. I would totally be that person. Like I would find like a teeter totter and make that a ride. I would make like the rock, scissors, paper gambling booth. I would do that and enjoy it and make the vibe. I know this is silly, but this will be fun. Just trust me. People would have fun. So that girl, are you that type of person? Or are you like, if I don't buy it new and I don't have like the perfect whatever, like I'm not doing it?
I'm kind of OCD once I get into a project. I really need T's crossed and I's dotted. But I am so bad at thinking ahead about what is coming up that I often find myself in a position of having to throw things together at a last minute. But once I've committed to doing that, though, I really do try and kind of make sure all the bases are covered in a really completist way, which I think Alexis was doing here. I was really impressed with her. I think these situations, kind of like Singles Week, these are where she shines as a character.
Yeah, she rose up and literally rose up.
Rose.
And like, you know, had to stand up to Moira, had to stand up to Roland and Ronnie and say, like, this is it. It's basically like, get on board or get out. You know, like, this is what's happening.
Right. Yes, she's asking them for things, but she was doing it in a way that Alexis pre-Schitt's Creek probably would not have approached these people. She would have treated these guys like the help and demanded it. This was not this Alexis, though. This Alexis was bringing them in and was working with them. She let them walk the carpet. She didn't say no to that.
Right.
She was genuinely excited and or at least paid lip service to the Merlot carpet, to Roland's skinny jeans. You know, he's walking out about the skinny jeans, and she turns. She doesn't need to say this because that sounds amazing. And, you know, and I think she was saying it with some sarcasm, but she didn't have to say it at all, though. And so Roland heard that as he's leaving and felt good about himself because of it. I love that Alexis. That's the Alexis Rose that is attractive and is the person you want her to be. That's the best version of herself, and I am all about that.
I completely agree. I had no idea if this premiere was really going to happen. I felt like, you know, they were going back and forth. I was a little thrown off when she was setting up the chairs in the town council hall, because I really thought we were going to end up back in the barn. It seemed like that would be a natural place to do the premiere, as we've had like many parties there and we know you can like clear it out and stuff. I kind of understood, after I realized we were in that space, why we didn't see the actual premiere or move forward with that, because what did you do? Like put like cloth over people's desks or something? Or like how could you make it look cool in there or whatever? You know what I mean? So I was sort of like, oh, what is she going to do? And then it was like, oh, they didn't even try to go there. That was probably wise to just like let it be done.
I've covered several red carpets and then gone in and seen the movie. It's one of the perks of, you know, deciding that you're going to be some kind of internet reviewer, is that you actually get invites to these things. The real glitz and glam is really what Alexis was doing. It's all about the shit that happens outside. The Interflix crowning background that they had, the carpet, but you know, with the background really struck me, because it only goes from, it's like 5 feet long, and then there's just nothing around there. But when you see the pictures, when the paparazzi take their pictures and you see them online, it looks like it's like this expansive event.
Were you surprised to see that Moira had the dress?
No,
super beautiful.
I thought it was really funny. I like the crowns that she had, the kind of on top. I like the idea that she returned the Stella McCartney dress that actually belonged
that
to
was
Alexis,
so but, funny. She's like,
blame UPS.
Like UPS yeah, came really, in their closet.
Moira was on fire in this episode. She had so as many lines that she whispered and or said under her breath that were killer and funny as she said out loud. When Alexis comes in and apologizes for or says she has a problem, and without missing a beat, Moira turns to her and says, "Don't worry, dear. We'll get you a good electrologist." You know, like so funny. Like she wasn't talking about hair in her body.
Oh my
you know,
God, super funny. I loved the entire part when she's just explaining the idea of having a premiere, and she's like, "What's next? I'm signing my name outside of Bob's garage." And then the whole
signing myself in signing my name in the cement at Bob's garage made me laugh out loud.
But then the Met Gala. At David's store, David's like, "I don't like that one." I would be the same way, ragging on every other business.
Right. Well, because he was joining, because he could.
No.
Right. Well, because he was chiming in too, and he was having a fun until it got a little too close to home, right? Because he says getting
until it was his business that was
school.
A small town.
I think that whole actually first scene gave rise to one of my favorite quotes ever that I'm definitely going to use in my life. It's this one from Alexis.
"Lick rust, thank you.
Lick rust, thank you." is definitely going to be how I respond to people in a going forward kind of way.
Oh my God, it's the parallel to eat glass.
It's not only the lick rust, which is funny. It's just lick rust, but then she says thank you in like that like sing-songy way without like the singing kind of way. The idea behind the movie premiere was great because it doesn't really matter what the inside looks like. Once you get through the red carpet and you go in the doors, it's just a movie theater usually. So all of the glamour, all of the effort is made on the outside, to get that red carpet look. So when you take the pictures, you see the Interflex background, you see maybe the red carpet if it's like a long shot, an up and down long shot, and it looks like it's in this great expansive thing, but really it's just Schitt's Creek on the other side of the background.
That was funny. They pulled back a little when they showed like the car pulling up, and it was like you could see like the dirt road and like the scrubby trees and all that kind of stuff. But it fit this movie so well. Like the idea of this movie being so quirky and odd and whatever, and then being, you know, having a premiere in a quirky, crazy little town feels like, you know what? That would have been a cool publicity stunt anyway.
Which is like how Moira sells it. She's like, you know, in this wretched little town, that's where we're going to air the psychological thriller. Let's talk about when the crows get released What was the funniest part of that whole scene? I think there were a couple of really standout funny parts, but I'm curious which ones you picked up on the
most. Oh my God. Well, the funniest was definitely David and Patrick and their whole response to the, you know, this is fucked. That was the funniest. Okay. The thing that I actually just, I wanted the roses to just go with it and be like, oh, the crows are coming for us. Get inside. Let's see what happens. Like, just go with it. Well, like, well, this is what happens in the movie.
That's interesting. I didn't actually occur to me, but part of that did resonate for me. Other than the David Patrick thing, I think the funniest thing was Moira gave two bits of advice here. She says, I know a little bit of their language. And she starts she starts a cawing, which made me laugh so hard that she's like, I speak a little bit of that language. Cawing! But it doesn't work.
And then, it doesn't work. She say like, shockingly, but it doesn't work. They don't listen.
She doesn't work. So she turns to her backup advice before she runs inside is she shouts, don't look them in the eye, which is so fucking funny.
Yes, that was awesome. So can funny. I tell you the way that she was wearing the crown, which I thought actually looked completely beautiful and awesome on her. I really thought one or more crow was going to get impaled on her crown because they had shown us all of those different headpieces that she's worn over the last couple seasons after the crowing, where it had like the crow feathers all over her head, that the idea that like a crow would get like impaled on that thing and there'd be like a crow stuck to her just seemed like that would be hilarious.
Thought using, because the crown was just so out there with all those like lines coming out of it, I thought the crows were going to nest on her, like the key art for the movie where she's covered in like the feathers and stuff. You know, Dr. Clara Mandrake, slightly unhinged or delightfully unhinged is how ornithologist today describes her character. I thought that was the shot we were going to get, was that the crows were going to come to her. but it brings up my last question I have for you from the episode was, do you like immersive experiences? Have you ever been to one of these kinds of things where, for whatever the event is, either a movie thing or, you know, obviously it happens at amusement parks, some kind of event where they've built a world around the thing that you're there to see or experience?
Yes, I 100% love it. And I think that that's like the magic of Disney in particular, is like what stands them apart from any amusement park anywhere, is that when you get in, you're started to be told a story, taken into the ride, like following some sort of storyline. And that's what makes it so magical, as opposed to just being on a roller coaster anywhere. For me, I love it. And I buy in every time. I love it. How about you?
For me, it's always about the story. And if you can make me forget, it's why I like really long books. You know, don't give me one page of detail. Give me 13 pages of detail, nice. You know, because I want to get lost in that world. So at New York Comic Con a couple of years ago, the height of Game of Thrones, Johnny Walker released a line of specialized Game of Thrones scotch called White Walker, which tied into the show. New York Comic Con, they had an event offsite one night where they took over a bar and they turned it into a white snow cavern. The entire bar was transformed into like head to toe ice, like you were walking in an ice cave. They had this whole like Game of Thrones White Walker theming going on inside the bar, and it was a tasting for the White Walker scotch. And like as soon as you walk through the doors of this bar, and it was, you know, a typical Manhattan bar, not very big, it's kind of long. You were not in a bar in New York City anymore. You were in like this ice cave with all, you know, the wind, you're beyond the wall. It was like very immersive, and it was for fucking scotch, and it was really good scotch too. But it was a great example of an immersive experience. So I love a good, Alexis is not wrong. I like a good immersive experience.
That creativity, maybe not being attacked by like, Rose. Is so, that's something that I aspire to be around all the time. I love that type of creativity and the smaller budget that they have and the more creative they are with things, the more I enjoy it.
For sure. I mean, and I agree with you. I think it all came full circle. I think Schitt's Creek is the perfect place to premiere a movie like the Crows Have Eyes 3, The Crowning. But I agree. Don't look them in the eye. I think Schitt's Creek is back. I think this is a future classic episode. I really, really enjoyed it. I can't wait for next week.
Me too. I love it. It ended too soon for me on this one. I said when it went dark after she's like cawing outside, I was like, no, that was it. I wanted so much more, which is always the sign of the perfect, perfect show. So on that note, this is Caroline from Daily Review.
This is Mike from Pop Culture Review.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.